So I want to start out today with a riddle. I don't think I've ever given you a riddle exactly. Maybe we could call it even a koan. So before Jesus, before Buddha, before Moses, even before the pyramids were built. I know, that's a stretch, way back, right? Yeah, before you, Irene, that's true. She said it, I did not say that, she said that. There was a being born on earth that is still living today. I know, it's pretty cool to think about, isn't it? In fact, this being resides in California. Can you guess what it is? Carl gets the prize. It's an ancient bristlecone pine tree. It lives in the Inyo Mountain, sometimes called the White Mountains. And it's called Methuselah. It's the oldest tree on earth, we think, currently at 4,855 years. Now, this picture is of a ancient bristlecone pine tree because Methuselah's location is a secret. So only the park folks know the specifics of where Methuselah and the researchers know. But these trees are so, as you can see, beautiful, right? There's these golden and red tones and these gnarled, I mean, they're works of art. And they reached into the sky, which is often blue and clear behind them, and their soil is rocky and dry. They have survived drought and climate change and fires and beetles, you name it. These trees have been standing for thousands of years. Generally not. I don't see a lot of greenery on them, no. I guess they shed the greenery. That's been a while. I suppose some of them do, but I don't recall a lot of greenery. So what is their secret anyway? What would the ancient bristlecone pine trees whisper is their secret if you were standing amongst them going, how have you guys done it? I mean, life is hard, right? All these challenges. It might be something they would say. Usually they're very kind-hearted, though, and they wouldn't say something like that. But I do think what they would say is, nothing is against me. Nothing is against me. What if we believed that nothing was against us? Maybe even no one was against us. I can guarantee you that our lives would have more joy, more of a sense of connection and fulfillment in many different ways. More of a sense of freedom and resiliency, for sure. So our fall study groups and series starts today with the book, The Eye of the Storm, by Reverend Dr. Gary Simmons, who's a Unity minister. And he prompts us to consider a bit about our language. These are his words and mine kind of mixed together in this part. Consider for a moment how we talk about many of our life experiences. Have you ever had your heart broken? Your butt kicked? Your ego bruised? Have you ever been stabbed in the back? Raked over the coals? Blasted? Thrown under the bus? Left hanging? We speak about our life experiences as if they are violent, actual attacks upon us, right? So the metaphors that we use tell us something. I mean, even when things are going good, we wait for the other shoe to drop, right? There's this underlying false belief that many of life's experiences are just happening to us and we're victims. That's a consciousness with which collectively, in many ways, we have agreed upon. But we here in this room and outside and online have a different way to live, don't we? A different story to tell, a different mindset to come from, and an understanding that if we shift from this limited space into this one, our language is different, our experience is different, and the way that we see and talk about it is different, so we spread the goodness instead of this other way of seeing. And when we live in that other way, that very limited and constrained way that says life only happens to me and I'm a victim of this life, then we live in a way that says watch your back, right? Protect your heart, defend your ego, and defend your reputation, which is really part of the ego anyway, right? Is it possible that some of life's experiences have actually become worse because of how we related to them? Yeah, right? All the time. We can, every one of us, probably point to a bunch of different examples in our own lives, maybe something that even happened this morning, right? So sometimes it's just a matter of how do we fill in the missing gaps of our knowledge? How do we take missing pieces of information? The careless driver on the road, the brusque person behind the counter, the siren you just heard, the 3 a.m. phone call that came in and your phone was buzzing all of a sudden, the thing that your spouse said or your coworker said or your friend said. We don't know maybe all the information of what just happened, or maybe we don't even know what was actually said. We think we heard something that was said. And then we fill in the gaps of what we don't know. And humans love stories, right? I know I love stories. I think you love stories too, right? This is often how we remember, how we learn. So stories generally have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And we like the whole story. So if we don't have the whole story, we just make stuff up. And then we operate as if it's the truth. And it's riddled with assumptions, right? Remember one of the four agreements? Don't make assumptions. And Byron Katie's work is the perfect antidote to that if you're not familiar with it. Is it true? Is it absolutely true? How can I know that it's true? Right? Who am I when I believe this thought? Essentially, who could I be? You know, so we work through that and we begin to poke some holes in the assumptions we make. Gary writes that when we fill in the gaps with our worst fears, we actually can create our worst nightmares. So instead of filling the gaps with our fears, let's make more spiritual space, so that we have a little more room for truth to arise. So I want to invite you to visualize, if you'd like. If you'd like to close your eyes for a moment. And just dropping back into that rich place within the heart that we were just visiting in meditation. And maybe, hopefully, you never left. And taking a few breaths into this space. I invite you in this space to call forth a recent or a current experience of adversity. This could be anything, big or small. Just let whatever comes. Something that didn't go or isn't going your way. And now imagine yourself accepting the situation, allowing it to be just as it is. Trusting that this exact experience has arisen for you. And knowing that more understanding may be yet to be revealed. And now you notice that a wise and loving being has showed up. It may be a feeling or a form or some light, who knows how it shows up for you. But in some way, a presence has shown up and you know it. it is wise and loving. And now I invite you to hand the whole situation over to them. This is a wise and loving being. You can trust them. Feel how it is to release your burden, to hand it over. If your situation has involved a conflict with another person, imagine dropping down from the story of your mind into the presence in your heart. And let the divine love flow through you, through your heart, to the other person. You don't have to want to send them love. You don't have to think about it. You're just giving space for divine love to flow through the portal of your heart to this other person. And just notice how you feel, having unburdened your situation, having opened your heart to love. And now I invite you to thank the wise and loving being in the presence of divine love in your heart, in whatever ways feel appropriate for you. And so we release the entire experience now and just breathe in and out of the heart a few times, easy, clearing breath. And when you are ready, come back into this space and open your eyes. That's better, isn't it? See, often our fears are not based on real evidence of danger, but are rather an indication that we have mentally disconnected or separated ourselves from the divine. So it's not really possible to ever be completely disconnected from the divine because we're a part of it. But it is definitely possible to think that we are and to experience then a sense of separation because of that. So fear is not always evidence of real danger. It may just be pointing us to the fact that we've disconnected in thought. So what could help us then is by remembering our unity principles, we can get back to that centered place. The first two principles in unity are the big ones to really ground in, right? The first one is God is, the nature of God. We say a statement of faith every Sunday that really solidifies this. There is one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, the all-loving goodness of God. Every time we say that, we are saying, nothing is against me, right? God is everywhere present. It's an all-loving goodness. It's in me. It's around me. It's everywhere. And so nothing is opposing. And then there's the second principle that says, I am this of this innate divinity. This is the truth of who I am. So we're reminding ourselves the nature of the universe is a friendly place filled with loving goodness of God. And I am, at the center of that, I am divine. which means I am naturally whole and therefore nothing can oppose me. So when we ground there, everything flows from that place. We are actually shifting a mindset of fear into a mindset of faith. When we root like ancient bristlecone pine trees in these truths, then we recall who we are and what God is, and everything flows from there. Faith, when it's in action, looks like trust. We look like, when we're in that space, somebody who trusts the divine flow of life. Somebody who trusts that they can co-create a life with Spirit. Somebody who trusts the innate wisdom of Spirit to show them where to go and what to do and what to say and what's next in their lives. So does shifting from a mindset of fear into a mindset of faith ensure that there will be no more adversity, no more conflict, no more problems, no more of that human stuff? No. I'm here to deliver the bad news. No. But here's the good news, or the reminder of what it's all about, right? We signed up to be a part of Earth School as souls to incarnate onto a planet full of duality and contrast and challenge. Why? Because it helps us spiritually grow and it allows the divine to fulfill itself. So we get to participate in that. For God to know itself through us and through all the calamities that we face, it's an opportunity for us to awaken, to grow, to remember, to demonstrate, to overcome. So that's the really juicy part of what we're about as human beings, really spiritual beings, having this human experience. So I became a Unity minister 20 years ago. Hard to believe. And thank you. Does feel like a big milestone. I didn't think about it till after it had passed. I was like, oh, this year was our 20th anniversary. And in that particular month, June of 2002, a lot of stuff happened. It was a joyous time. It was an exciting time. It was a time of, just like graduations typically are, right? The world is your oyster. What will come next? As you step out, what will it look like? It's scary, it's exciting, it's passionate, it's all these things, right? Well, I did not follow the advice of many in terms of, I got involved in a relationship just before ministerial school. And it, when I got to ministerial school, they said, don't get involved in a new relationship. Too late. So that same month, weeks after ordination, my partner and I were to be married on the Unity grounds. It was the very first same-sex union allowed at Unity in the history of Unity. We had worked, we had petitioned, we had met with board members and, you know, the highest echelons of the organization to be allowed to have this marriage. And weeks before, months before, really, things weren't growing great in the relationship. Issues were arising, and I took it into prayer a lot. And Spirit kept saying, go, 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 keep going, go ahead. So I did. We did. Paul and I dreamed of having a retreat ministry together. We had a lot of the things worked out in our minds. Very exciting, right? But the issues didn't resolve, and 4 months later, we went our separate ways. Why? Why? Really, there was a lot of that. You've been there before, right? And why was I guided to do this? Oh my gosh, I was angry, I was sad, I was flummoxed. I was embarrassed. I mean, it was a hard time. Meanwhile, all my classmates were flying off to their new ministries with joy and sending emails and making phone calls of how great it was. And I was going, what the heck is going on? Right? So it was a really big time of growth. I lamented my lot a lot. I bent the ears of my friends and family about how I'd been done wrong. Could have been a country song playing over and over again, you know? Have you been here before? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. So these life experiences were not at all what I had imagined. I mean, to top it off, I had been guided into ministry, and then I had no breadcrumbs of where to go next. It was like, what am I supposed to do? What's my ministry? Was I supposed to do this at all? No, I didn't really question that because I knew it, I felt it, but I did feel lost as to where to go. So given that this was supposed to be a joyous time, you know, I kind of put that lid on top of it, right? And everything seemed to be working against me. So Gary says, our well-being is held hostage or liberated by what we make our life experiences mean. Liberated or held hostage, our well-being. It's our choice, right? It's all about what we make it mean and how we interact with it. Look, the truth is, pain is going to happen in human life, right? Suffering is a choice. Suffering is always a choice. So one day I found myself at the chapel in the woods. It's a place on Unity campus. It's a rustic platform with a frame, literally in the woods. I loved that place. And there I was on my knees praying, right? It was that kind of prayer. Pray crying. Anybody ever pray cry? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Pray crying, yeah. And I talked to God. I talked to God within me. I talked to God all around me. I talked to the trees. And I said, I want clarity. I want understanding. I want direction. I know I was called to be here. I know I was called to do this. What is next? What am I supposed to do? And what was I met with? Silence. Silence. Well, here's the thing. I was working at Silent Unity. I didn't put it together at the time. Silent Unity, if you don't know, is Unity's international prayer ministry, which meant I had the privilege of being on the phone all day long praying with people and in a room full of crescendoing prayers all day long. Part of our paid time was to go in the prayer vigil chapel and meditate for half an hour every day. Do you think I might have been in the right place? My supervisor was like a mother figure. She was a wise and patient confidant. And she later became a very good friend. So right under my nose was everything I needed, exactly what I needed. It reminds me of the Karen Taylor Good song, I pray for what I want and I get what I need, essentially. And so that's always the case, right? I don't always get what I want, but I do get what I need. And it's, what's that? Rolling Stones? Oh, Rolling Stones did it too. All right, cool. I've been steeped in New Thought music for a long time. I should get out more. I know, I've seen Mick Jagger. It's just been a while. So my prayers then become prayers of surrender, right? Of giving over and letting go and letting God. Oh, such a nice way to go, really. And in hindsight, I can say that I learned a lot of lessons about trust and humility and self-love during that time. In hindsight, I saw these life experiences were not against me. They were for me. So you don't have to wait until you have hindsight. You can have foresight right now. For whatever is up in your life, whatever comes your way from this day forward, for whatever you're chewing on from 100 years ago or 10 years ago or 1 year, it doesn't matter. Whatever is present for you right now, you can have foresight to say, this is not against me, it's for me. How? Show me the way. Maybe it'll be met with silence for a while. Whatever you get will be exactly what you need, even this life circumstance, because whatever it is here to help us grow. It's here to help us spiritually awaken. It's here to help us move into the places of divine flow and joy and so on. So I can't imagine, if you can't imagine that whatever that particular circumstance that is up is for you right now, maybe you can just shift into a place of trust and know that in divine time, it will be revealed to you. I can't see it now, but in divine time, I trust that I will see the blessings. And in the meantime, I'm going to do my best to shift out of fear, out of that mindset of fear, into one of faith. So how? How do we do that? Well, I've been blessed to be amongst the ancient bristlecone pine trees a few times, and a couple times I've had some really rich spiritual experiences. In one of them, I asked a tree, what was my message to bring back to my people at that time? And the tree said, rest. That was all. Rest. Said it several times, but that was all. I tried to get more out of the tree. I'm a doer. I wanted actions. Rest. Rest. Allow. You know, sleep. Pause. Grieve. Love. Whatever it is that's there in rest for you. Let it be, right? Let it be. REST is our acronym to shift from fear to faith. And it's simple. We can root in our spiritual principles, that's the R, express our gratitude for what is here now, what are the gifts that are available to me right now, surrender in prayer, and trust divine timing. When we do those things, I'm telling you, everything flows with grace and ease, even the most difficult situations. To paraphrase Gary, life experiences are portals, breaking, and breakthrough points intended to spiritually awaken us. So we can choose to work with them, or we can fight against them. One route will point us to more suffering, and the other will free us to grow and to realize our divine potential. So let's just shift from fear to faith. Let's just allow ourselves that, knowing nothing is against us. In fact, everything is for us. Will you affirm that with me? Nothing is against me. My life experiences are here for me, and so it is.